Shabbos Daf Mem Zayin. So Rabbi Yochanan says in the name of Rav Rumnis that Rabbi allowed him to move a censer that they would use to burn incense that had muksa ashes in them. When they needed the place of the censer, you could move it even though it was holding these muksa ashes. However, Reb Zera asks Reb Asi, we have a Mishnah that says you're allowed to pick up a child that's holding a stone in his hand or a basket that has a stone in it, even though the stone is muksa. But Reb Yochanan comes and qualifies this and says we're talking about a basket which is filled with fruit, because the fruit is not muksa, and therefore, since the basket is filled with fruit, then it doesn't, the basket is not a base for the muksa rock, and therefore you can move it. However, this implies that if there's no fruit, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you can't move the basket. So how can Rabbi Yochanan allow you to move the censer that has the muksa ashes in it? So Gemara answers, Rav Asi answers, that we're talking about a censer which has leftover granules of ash that weren't burned, and since they weren't burned, they're not muksa. However, Abai says, if that's true, then these leftover granules of ash, of unburned ash of the incense, they have no significance in Rebbe's house because Rebbe was really rich. And even though these can be useful for a poor person, we have a braisa that says that the clothing for a poor person is going to be tameh when it's in their possession. The clothing for a rich person will be tameh when it's in their possession. But this implies that the clothing of a poor person will not be tameh when it's in a rich person's possession. So therefore, these granules, which are only fit for the poor, would be considered muksa for Rebbe. So because they have no use to him whatsoever, because they're really fit for the poor. So that's why the Gemara answer, Abai answers, that we're dealing with a censer which is filled with ashes, that's just like a vessel. The censer that's filled with ashes is going to be just like a vessel that's used for excrement, which you're allowed to move out of your house on Shabbos. However, Rava doesn't like this because he says that a vessel that's used for excrement is disgusting, but the censer that you're burning incense with is not disgusting. Furthermore, that vessel is going to be open while the censer is closed and covered. So you can't really compare them and say that just because you're allowed to move this vessel for excrement, you can move the censer. So that's why Rava answers that when they were in Rav Nachman's house, they used to move this brazier, which was a pan that they would burn coals on it for its heat. And they were able to move it when they needed the ashes that were not muksa, even though there was muksa wood on it, because the ashes were of much greater significance to them, and that's what they were going for. So it didn't make a difference that the non-muksa ashes were on it. So Rebbe is talking about a case where you're moving the censer that has ash in it that's not muksa because there's a use for that ash, and in such a case, you would be allowed to move the censer. However, we have a braisa that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon agree that if a lamp has a wick remnants in it, leftover wick, you're not allowed to move the lamp because it's a base to the muksa wick. And so it's showing that it's still muksa, the lamp is still muksa, even though there's the much more valuable oil in it, which is not going to be muksa, and you want to get to that oil. Since it has the wicks in it, which are muksa, you are not allowed to move the lamp. However, just like in this case where you're not allowed to move the lamp, you shouldn't be able to move this brazier to get to the ash because it has the wood on it. Just like by the lamp where the wick is not so significant compared to the oil, you are not allowed to move it. So too where the wood is not significant compared to the ash that you want, it should be muksa and you shouldn't be able to use it. However, Abai answers that this braisa is talking about the galil where they cared more about the wicks than the oil. The wicks were very scarce, and because they assigned a greater significance to the presence of the muksa wicks in the lamp, deem that lamp muksa and make you not able to move it. Levi Bar Shmuel met Reb Abba and Reb Huna Bar Chia, and he asked them if you can assemble a coppersmith's bed, which is this portable bed that has sections that kind of fit in together. He asked if you're allowed to assemble that on Shabbos, and they said, yeah, it's mutter, you are allowed to. However, Reb Yehuda said that both Rav and Shmuel agree that if you assemble a coppersmith's bed, you're chayav to bring a carbon chatas. You're not allowed to do it. So we have a braisa which questions Reb Huna Bar Chia and Rabbi Abba's opinion that says if you reattach the branch of a candelabra on Shabbos, you have to bring a chatas. So too, you shouldn't add sections to a plasterer's pole. But if you did, you don't have to bring a carbon chatas, but it is aser derabanan. Rav Simlai says if you assembled a round horn, then you would be chayav to bring a carbon chatas. But if you assembled a straight horn, you'd be putter from bringing a carbon chatas. You don't have to bring it. But the point is, this braisa says that you're not allowed to reattach the branches of the candelabra, which just fit into each other. So too, you shouldn't be allowed to reattach the bed and put the whole bed together. So the Gemara answers that, granted, this braisa does disprove Rav Huna Bar Chia and Rabbi Abba, but they're going like a different braisa, which says, regarding bed sockets, bed legs, and crossbow nuts, you shouldn't reattach those on Shabbos. If you did, though, you would be potter for bringing a carbon chatas, but it is still an Issa Jerabanan, and you definitely shouldn't nail them in. Otherwise, if you did nail them in, you would be totally chayav to bring a carbon chatas. But Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, if parts of it just fit together loosely, and you could just push them together, then that's allowed. So when they were talking about the coppersmith bed, they were going like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, because you're just kind of pushing it in loosely together, and that's what's keeping it together. And according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that is fine. The Gemara brings in a story that in Rabbi Chama's home, he had a sectional bed that was kind of like the coppersmith's bed that they would put together. And they would reassemble it on Yontif. So there's a rabbi who asked Rava, why were they allowed to do it? Even though it's an indirect form of assembly, because you're kind of just fitting the things together, the pieces together, and there are no screws, and you're not really building it. So granted, that might not be Aser D'Oraisa, but it's still an Iser D'Rabbanan. On a D'Rabbanan level, you can't do that. So Rava answered, they're going like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who says that if you do it just very loosely and just kind of rest the pieces together, that is okay. The next Mishnah says that you can place a vessel under a lamp to catch sparks that are flying out, but you are not allowed to put water into that vessel, because then that's going to cause the sparks to be extinguished. So the Gemara questions this. By putting the vessel under the lamp, you're now making this vessel unusable, because the vessel was fine, but now it has this muksa sparks in it, and now you can't use it. So how can you change the status of something which is able and fit to be used on Shabbos into something which is now unusable? So the Gemara answers, it's going like Rav Huna Bar Yehuda of Yehoshua, who says that sparks have no substance, and therefore they will not change the status of a vessel. The Gemara questions the next part of the Mishnah, which says that you are not allowed to put water in the vessel. So it seems like this Mishnah is going like the opinion of Rabbi Yosef, because Rabbi Yossi holds that by indirectly extinguishing a fire, that would be usur on Shabbos. However, Rabbi Yossi only forbids doing this on Shabbos. Actually, indirectly extinguishing a fire would be usur on Shabbos. This Mishnah seems to say you can't even fill up a vessel with water before Shabbos, which would not be Rabbi Yossi's opinion. So the Gemara wants to say maybe the Mishnah is talking about where you are filling up the vessel with water on Shabbos, and it's going like Rabbi Yossi. But we can't say that because we have a brace that says you could put a vessel under a lamp to catch the sparks even on Shabbos, so obviously you could place it there before Shabbos. And then the Braisa says you are not allowed to put water in the vessel even before Shabbos. And from the fact that it says you can't put water in the vessel before Shabbos shows that we're not going like Rabbi Yossi. So Rav Ashi says the Mishnah can even be going like the Rabbanan, who argue with Rabbi Yossi and say that indirectly extinguishing a fire is not usur, but here they would agree with that it is usur in this case, because it's a much more direct way of it causing the fire to be extinguished. You're really directly causing the fire to be extinguished. So according to Rav Ashi, this Mishnah seems like it could even be going with the opinion of the Rabbanon. Hadron Allah, Ki Rashkayach, and finishing the third parak, the beginning of the fourth parak, Bamat Tomnin, the Mishnah says that you are not allowed to insulate food on Shabbos. Sorry, you're not allowed to put hot food in these things to insulate it before Shabbos. You can't put it in pulp, which is the leftovers from the fruits and stuff that you're pressing. The pulp is that leftover stuff. You're not allowed to insulate the food before Shabbos with pulp, manure, salt, lime, sand, whether these things are wet or dry, with straw, with grape skins, with flocking. Flocking is like cotton and wool type things, with grasses and all these things when they're moist, but you are allowed to when they are dry. Right. And the reason for this is that all these substances that we just listed add heat to something that's being insulated in them. They make it hotter, and that's not allowed because it's kind of facilitating the cooking. But you are allowed to use something to insulate food before Shabbos that is not going to add heat and won't add to the cooking process. The Gemara questions the first case of the pulp. Are we talking about olive pulp, which is much hotter, gets much hotter, but sesame pulp is okay to insulate the food with? Or are we saying that the Mishnah is saying you can't use sesame pulp, and all the more so since we know olive pulp is hotter, you can't use that. So Reb Zera tries to bring in an answer from Chadzevei Reb Yanai that says that you are not allowed to put a box that has insulated food in it over olive pulp, which seems to say that we're only dealing with olive pulp is what you can't use for insulation. However, the Gemara doesn't like that, because regarding actual insulation, there you are not even allowed to use sesame pulp. But in the case of just putting something over this pulp, yeah, that's where you only can't use olive, because only olive pulp is going to radiate the heat upwards and cause the box that you're putting over this pulp to get hotter. But by the sesame pulp, that's not going to radiate the heat upwards and affect the box that you place on it. So that's not a good proof that the Mishnah is dealing with that. So it says that the Mishnah is really just talking about any type of either sesame or olive pulp you are not allowed to use for your insulation. Shkayach.